All right, let's do 10 Commandments. We're going to do a series on the 10 Commandments. Yes, this is including the Easter. Next week, it sort of worked out really nice. We're going to do the introduction of the 10 Commandments this week. Next week, of course, is Easter. And the first commandments, you shall have no other gods before me, which is, I think, a fitting Easter sermon. So we're going to do that. We are going to continue with this next week as we talk about the 10 Commandments. Now, I have often taught many times that the commandments of the Old Testament are not binding on Christians. This is sort of one of the things that I'm a stickler about, to be fair, because the Bible is too. There are many reasons for this, obviously, as we're not going to look into all those reasons right now. If you want to talk about that later, we can, or if you want to come talk to me in my office. The Old Testament commands are not binding. That covenant has been fulfilled. Now, so then, why should we look at the Ten Commandments if the Old Testament commands are not binding? Now, we know, of course, that the Old Testament has many things that are beneficial to us. Paul says specifically in the Corinthians that these things were written for our learning and for our example, right? That we might not make the same mistakes that they did. But the Ten Commandments in particular have a value because these commands issue from the eternal God and thus reveal much about God's character and who he is. Most of these commands, you could say even all of them, although one of them is altered slightly, are repeated by either Jesus or the apostles, and thus their morality still applies today. Actually, many of these commands are also issued before the Exodus. That is, God, as he has dealings with various people in the early parts of Genesis, he issues these same commands to them. So even these are eternal moral codes. They were given before the Ten Commandments. They are given after the Ten Commandments. They were given in various covenants and even in times where there was no specific covenant with people. So much of this stuff, these 10 things, comprise things that God clearly thinks are moral in all circumstances, in all particular iterations of his relationships with people. There is a reason the Ten Commandments have resonated so well throughout the ages, even into the Christian age. How many people do you know that still reference the Ten Commandments? Now, there's a lot of misunderstanding about how they should be applied or why or not they should be applied. But this set of things, these 10 things, really have stuck in the minds of people because they are simple, they are somewhat comprehensive for human behavior, not just our own behavior, but our relationships with other people. And they are unambiguous. They're easy. They're not easy to follow, obviously, but they're easy to understand. They're easy to grasp, and they're easy to remember. Gideon, at some point, we're going to sing the Ten Commandments song, not today, maybe next week. He goes through cycles, kids do. He used to love this song, now he's on to the Books of the Bible song. But there's a song that the kids sing, and it's so easy to remember because it's just 10 things, right? These things are valuable for us. Now, as we do ourselves a disservice, and you know if you've been here any length of time, that I love to look at the context. Because no moral code exists in a vacuum, right? No law is just sort of, now, I've often said that the Bible didn't just drop from heaven completed, but this particular section of the Bible happened to drop from heaven completed because God just gave it to Moses on the mountain, right? But even so, even though it just dropped from heaven and was given to the Israelites, there's a lot of context. There's a lot of background as to what's going on in the story in Exodus about why these commands are given and how they're given and who they're given to. And that stuff matters. So that's what we're going to look at this week. There's a lot of buildup. Now, the commands are found in Exodus 20, and they're repeated in Deuteronomy 5. As we go through this series, we're going to look at both texts. But the buildup in Exodus 19 to the issuing of these 10 commandments, there's a lot of important, valuable stuff. Exodus 19, beginning in verse 3. The Lord called to him being Moses, out of the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell the people of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians." What did he do to the Egyptians? The 10 plagues, right? Bringing them out, and then the waters parted of the Red Sea, and the water came back and crushed the Egyptians. How I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Note the if, the important little word if. If you indeed keep my commandments, or keep my covenant rather, obey my voice, you shall be my treasured possession. Now, of course, we know that they sort of did that, but not really, as we go through Israelite history. These are the words that you shall speak to the people. We skip down to verse 9. When Moses told the words to the people of the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate. That word consecrate is very important in this story. The idea of making pure or making holy, preparing to meet a deity. That's what's happening here. That they need to make themselves clean and righteous. Consecrate them today for tomorrow, today and tomorrow rather. Let them wash their garments and be ready for the third day. On the third day, the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. Thus you shall set limits for the people all around, saying, take care not to go up to the mountain or touch the edge of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall be put to death. No hand shall touch him, but he shall be stoned or shot, whether beast or man. He shall not live. When the trumpets sound a long blast, then they shall come up to the mountain. A lot of dangerous stuff going on here. Now, they were sort of Mount Sinai. I should have had a picture. I didn't think about it until right this second. Mount Sinai was elevated out of a plain, right? There would have been a clear delineation for them as they're surrounding this mountain. There would have been a clear delineation for them when the mountain began. And he says, put up boundaries, right? Set limits for it. And I don't know, we would use caution tape. I don't know exactly what they did. Maybe they just strung rope along. But the boundary of it, right? Do not touch the mountain, or what? You shall die. This word consecrate goes with this idea. And beginning in Exodus 3, really, is where this idea first begins. In Exodus 3, when the Lord speaks to Moses out of the burning bush, take your sandals off. Where you are standing is holy. The mountain was going to be holy because God was there. Verse 16. On the morning of the third day, there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, so that all the people in the camp trembled, because that would be terrifying. Again, they're standing, they're camped around this mountain, and then this mountain rises, and you can picture it in your mind. The clouds form around, and there's lightning, and there's loud thunder, and there's a trumpet blast. Like, where's the trumpet blast coming from? God's just making that sound appear out of nowhere. It would be terrifying to you, I think, to us, if we were there. Then Moses brought people out of the camp to meet God. This is sort of a meet and greet, an introduction, if you will. They took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in fire. The smoke of it went up like the great smoke of a kiln. The whole mountain trembled greatly. Almost as an earthquake, right? The mountain itself is buckling under the weight of the Lord. And as the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him in the thunder. This is an awe-inspiring, fear-inducing event, the likes of which none of them... Interestingly, they had seen a bunch of stuff previously. They'd seen the 10 plagues. They've seen the things that God did in Egypt, in the water, and the rushing and the parting of the seas and the rushing in on the Egyptians. But this, I think, would have trumped them all as they are seeing the Lord descend in person. Exodus 19, verse 21, the Lord said to Moses, go down and warn the people. Again, warn the people, lest they break through to the Lord and look, and many of them perish. Let the priests who come near to the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them. And Moses said to the Lord, the people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for you yourself warned us, saying, set limits around the mountain and consecrate it. This word consecrate again, right? That if you want to approach God, you have to be holy. You have to be pure. You have to be cleansed. You can't just approach God in your normal state. That there needs to be something that makes you righteous to withstand. And God spoke, chapter 20, verse 1, all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And then he gives them these 10 commandments. Now, we see, first of all, morality begins with the character of the lawgiver. that all this buildup, all this preamble, all this stuff that leads into these Ten Commandments begins with who God is. Why these Ten Commandments matter so much is all of the stuff that just happened. And he keeps referencing. How many times does he keep referencing the things he just did in Egypt? These things that I did for you. The character of who God is what makes these commandments matter. One, awe-inspiring is what it should be. Awe-inspiring, fear-inducing power. We read a couple verses again. On the morning of the third day, there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, so that all the people in the camp trembled. Down in verse 18, Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in fire. The smoke of it went up like the smoke of a kiln, and the whole mountain trembled greatly. As they approach God to receive these commandments, what is God doing? He's making it very clear. You cannot compare to me. I am the one who saved you. I am the one who's powerful. I am the one who has all of the power in this relationship. Now, we're going to talk about what God did with that power in a minute, but I do think it's important that these commands issue from somebody who has the right to make them because he is all powerful. He has the power to execute these commands, to enforce these commands, to show mercy, and he's going to talk about his mercy in a bit with these commands. He is the one that has the power in this situation here, not the Israelites. Second, we see complete and absolute holiness. It's not just enough to be powerful. Part of it is also his holiness. And we've talked about this already, right? Go to the people and consecrate them today. Let them wash their garments. Go and warn the people lest they break through to the Lord and look, and many of them perish. Perish why? Just for looking at God, they would perish. The priests who would come near, they also needed to consecrate, even though they were already priests, they needed to consecrate themselves specifically to approach the Lord. Morality starts with the purity and set apartness of the Creator. He can make the moral commands because he is holy. We are not. Now, we want to be, and that's what we strive to be, and in large part, the commandments that issue next, beginning with the Ten Commandments, but then into the rest of the Old Covenant, in essence is, this is how you be holy as I am holy. Like, I'm awesome and I'm holy, and this is God speaking, not me, right? I'm awesome and I'm holy and I'm powerful. This is how you will emulate me. This is how you will reach and approach and come before me. This is how you will live lives that are emulating my sacredness. And he's going to issue all of these commands then that will enable them to do so. If we do not have the right understanding of God, we cannot arrive at the right understanding of morality, since morality issues from him. This is why, and you don't just see this today, you can look throughout the history of the world. Every civilization that has risen and fallen, the morality of that civilization waxes and wanes as that society understands Yahweh. Societies, as they drift farther from Yahweh, become less moral. Societies, as they drift closer to Yahweh, become more moral. That's just how it is. If you don't understand God, you also see this in congregations. Various congregations, not just today, but you can study congregational history, church history. As congregations understand or misunderstand God, they become more or less righteous. Morality does not exist independent of the Creator. It cannot and it will not. And so if we do not understand the Creator, we will not understand morality, which is why we have all this buildup in Exodus 19. Secondly, we see the motivation to obey comes from the grace and activity of God. He did not just come to Israel and demand obedience without any prior experience or relationship. As he keeps referencing in this preamble, this buildup, there has been a whole book's worth of activity prior to the issuing of these commands. things that God has done for them over and over. You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. This is not just an Old Testament idea. The idea that our motivation to obey comes from what God has done first. This is repeated, and we just looked at this 3 weeks ago, when we did our sermon on 1 John. 1 John 4, 9 through 11, in this the love of God was made manifest among us, that God sent his only Son into the world so that we might live through him. In this is love, not that we have loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. So what? If God loved us, we also ought to love one another. Our motivation to love, which is an obedience of his command, right? In John, Jesus says it in another passage in John, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. But that comes from the fact that God acted first. His commands are not devoid of great blessing to us. Prior to our obedience to the commands, we were blessed. Paul says in Romans, while we were still weak, Christ died for our sins. Our motivation to obey comes from our understanding, not just of who God is, but what God has done for us already. So as he's issuing these commands to the Israelites, he reminds them, look, I literally just saved you from slavery in Egypt. Obey these commands because of who I am and what I've done for you. God has a right to expect obedience, not just because of who he is, but because of what he has done. And I would submit to you that what God has done for us is far greater than what he did for the Israelites. He saved the Israelites from slavery in Egypt. He has saved us from an eternity of separation from him. One of those is better than the other, as the Hebrew writer says over and over. So as we conclude this lesson, this introduction to the Ten Commandments, and we're going to go through the Ten Commandments, and we're going to look at them, and then we're going to pull from a lot of different places as we look at these ideas, because there's a nice list in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, but of course these ideas are deeper than just one sentence, so we're going to pull from a lot of places. But we will not understand the Ten Commandments and the morality that they represent if we don't understand who God is and what God has done. For them, he brought them out of the land of slavery, destroyed all the Egyptians. For us, he has brought us out of slavery to sin, slavery to the one who would stand opposed to God, slavery to the fear of death, as it is said in other places, what God has done for us. And as we examine these Ten Commandments that have distilled so much morality into a few words, many of these things transcend any particular covenant. That's why we're going to look at this particular iteration and pull from other places. These are things that, for the most part, transcend the older new covenants, the covenants with Moses and David and the covenant through Christ. These things are, a lot of these things, from the very, very beginning of humanity, things that God expects us to do. Most of these commands form the basic building blocks for righteousness in all ages, which would include our age. Things that God expects us to do, to be holy as he is holy. And as we are motivated by our gratitude, I should say that differently, right? We should be motivated by our gratitude to him. Not out of a sense of legalism or earning our salvation and righteousness, but a sense of, I am so grateful that you have saved me. How can I live a life that is pleasing to you out of gratitude for your awesome grace and your mercy? The idea of grace or mercy is not just a New Testament idea. That's what he's saying here. I have already saved you. I brought you out of Egypt. Keep my commandments, and we can remain in that relationship. Isn't that what he does for us today? He's offered that salvation to us through the sacrifice of his son, given us a chance at forgiveness and redemption. And he says the same thing, right? Keep in my covenant. Keep the things that I have commanded you, and we can remain in that awesome relationship. God's already done the hard work, guys. All that remains is for us to take hold of it.